Time now to go to Sunday school with the professor. Giants third base coach Ron Wotus with Marty Lawrence.
I didn't know you wanted to get involved with the discussion, Mr. Helper.
On your home of Giants baseball.
Good answer. Like the way you think.
KNBR 104.5 and 680, the sports leader.
Brought to you by River Islands, one of the country's top-selling master plan communities just across the Altamont in Lathrop. Where else can you live on a lake, next door to a park, or walking distance to your kid's new school? With 10 new neighborhoods, River Islands is the one place you can't afford to miss.
All right, as we talk a little ball here with the professor, Woe, how are you?
Good evening, Marty. I'm well. Did you have a good week this week?
Yeah, I think so. I'm here in Arizona. The weather is pretty good. I am in shelter, and I must say I'm proud of myself. I didn't leave the house or, the area for the whole week, and I feel that that's what's got to be done. So I'm lucky enough to be here. The weather's good, and I'm just following all the suggestions of, people involved with baseball and how to work this thing out. So kind of interesting. How about yourself?
Yeah, no, the same. I think everybody's probably on the same program, right? There's not much we can do right now. I'm just chipping away at things around the house and keeping my ear to the TV and the radio and, doing some work, obviously, to get ready when we do begin and play again. Things do seem to be getting better on the COVID in some areas. Obviously, we have a long, long way to go. So, every week's it's a different vibe out there, and hopefully we can get this behind us and open up the country, as you said in your earlier remarks, sooner opposed than later.
Well, that's what we hope, and it's got to be a healthy way to do it, and that's the key. But you guys had meetings. Well, last week you told us meetings pretty much each day, perhaps on the internet, coaches and all that. Is that still going on?
Yeah, we touch base Friday about once a week, and we're delving into some scouting information and putting our thoughts together on some of the clubs. Of course, you don't have the rosters yet, but there's some video work that we can do just to be ready for when we start again. So we're continuing to do that. Yes,
you had an interesting tweet or text to me. I forget what it was this week that you connected with some of your Hawaii Islander friends and players who you haven't been in touch with for over 40 years. How about that? There is a side to this thing where we do connect with people.
Yeah, it's really outstanding. I've been in touch with a few of my players that I played with. Ray Krawczyk lives down in Arizona, and Benny DiStefano, people remember his name. And John Malcolm, who was a teammate of mine in Hawaii, and actually his son is in the Giant organization. So we've talked in the last couple of years, but one of these guys decided to try to get in contact with more of our players from the early 80s, the Hawaii Islanders, and, of course, Tommy Sant, my manager, and he did it. And he's gone down the list. He's got all these guys. Some of them I haven't heard from and since the early 80s, and we're all in a group text, and it's really nice to be able to reconnect and see the conversation in a group text with all these guys. But I have to tell you, I had to shut my phone down because my phone was blowing up at 4 a.m. These guys are all over the country. I have it on silent, but it vibrates when there's a tweet, and I can't get the phone far enough away from me to stop hearing these tweets. So I came home one day, looked at my phone, or came in from outside, looked at my phone, and I had 300 text messages.
On.
So I'm not lying, because all these guys are feeling the same way. They're so happy to reconnect with guys, and everybody's texting. So I had to back off and take the numbers I need, and we'll talk live next time we need to talk.
Well, you had, what was it, Mario Mendoza on that team?
Mario Mendoza was on that team. Even Nelson Norman, another middle infielder that people may remember. Mike Bielecki was a real good pitcher for a lot of years. It started with the Pirates, but then went to Atlanta and bounced around a few other clubs. But it's just fun to reminisce and see the old photographs. They sent some old photographs from the Hawaii Islanders from us. We used to call it Makapu Mondays. We play a doubleheader on Sunday, and we go to Makapu Beach on Oahu. And I was getting some photos from these guys, which I've never seen, photos of me in the dugout, which, you know, not many of us have a lot of pictures from back in the early 80s when we're on the field and the things that we're doing. You know, we didn't have phones like we did today. So it's really nice to see these things and reminisce.
Well, the one picture you did send, Bill is going to join us in just a second. The one picture you did send, it looks like you're reading an analytics chart on defense on the bench. Was that true?
I don't think that's what I was doing. I don't know what that was, the picture that I saw, but I can guarantee you it wasn't an analytics chart, that's for sure. But, you know, one player who I got a call earlier this week, and I think you were going to mention as well, is Ed Farmer was a teammate of ours in Hawaii, and he just passed away, unfortunately, this past week. And was saddened to hear that. My old AAA manager, Tommy Sant, gave me a call. He was a manager of that club in Hawaii and broke the news to me before it became public. But, yeah, I was sorry to see Ed gone. He was a great teammate and a great person and player.
Yeah, we're going to have a segment with Ray Fossey a little bit later on tonight where we play an interview I did with Ed Farmer. I'll tell you, well, I go back into these archives. I can't believe all the things that I've got over the years. And it's a great interview with Ed Farmer talking about a beef that he got into with Al Cowens. And Bill is going to talk about this in a second, where Al Cowens was playing for the Tigers at that point. Ed was a relief pitcher, I think, for the White Sox. And he was terrific at that point. Ed Farmer had a good end of his career in the bullpen.
So yeah, he did. Cowens, go ahead.
Yeah, so Cowens, there's time is called, and Cowens apparently tries to look at the location of where Jim Sundberg had set up. And Ed Farmer saw this, and they called time. And, of course, instead of setting up outside, the next pitch came in right under Cowens' chin and hit him. And there's a whole fight, lawsuits and all this. And Ed Farmer tells the whole story, and Ray Fossey talks about it. But, that's the way baseball was played then. And it was an interesting story.
Yeah, no, I've actually heard that story. And, I'm sure your listeners will want to hear about that because it is a great story. And I know Ed Farmer, he didn't take any gruff. He made up his mind to do something. He was doing it. He didn't care who would tell him not to do it or what the circumstances. He was pretty strong-minded when he made up his mind and was a great teammate, and we're sorry to see that he's gone.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Bill Lasky joins us. Bill, how are you?
Well, good Saturday to you both, and I have two quick questions for both of you. The first one's going to go right to Marty. Marty, I know you're a big Jerry Seinfeld fan, and are you becoming the bubble boy of Mesa, Arizona?
Very good. I like it. Very good. I'm starting to feel that way. I go out in the – so I have a yard. I go out in the backyard and sit out there for a while. But, you know, the thing is, you know, down here, you know, the weather is good. So, you know, you don't have that feeling of, you know – well, gee, I have to be shut in all the time. So if you try to get out, but you have to be realistic that you can't go anywhere. So, yeah. I'm the bubble boy. I like it.
My second question, Marty, goes to Ron. And Ron, you know, you're talking about the Hawaiian Islanders. If they had a Hall of Fame, you would be in it because your numbers were unbelievable in Hawaii. And I want to know how in the hell you did that with all the teams coming in there. I think you had to play like a 7-game series against each team, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. Well, you know what would happen? They'd all come in, and every starting pitcher that threw against it, he was at the beach from, you know, 10 in the morning till 2 before he went to the ballpark. He had nothing on the ball. So we just feasted at home. We had a pretty good home field advantage over there in Hawaii. And to your point, we did play teams 7 days straight or 8 days. They'd come over for 8 days one of the years, and they changed it. But we actually played the Phoenix Giants, which everybody knows they used to be in Phoenix. We played them 8 games in Hawaii. Then we turned around and got on the same flight back to the mainland. And we're going, guess where we're going? To play the Phoenix Giants. We played them 16 straight games, and we had 3 fights in those 16 days.
You know, Bill, let me ask you this. What do you think about the proposal? And both you guys are very well connected, well, down here in Phoenix. You know, you manage down here. And Bill, you've played in this kind of environment. Mm-hmm. What do you think of the proposal? Just from the idea of playing games in Arizona. Forget about the health and everything else. But what about just playing games down here?
You know, Marty, the first thing I think
you got.
Yeah, I think the first thing which you said, Marty, I think it was last Saturday, it could have been two Saturdays ago, about everything being an experiment. And I think each day it seems like it's changing. Now they're dividing it up. Now they're talking about playing in Florida, which I thought a week ago everything was in Arizona. But it's going to really take a toll with the heat. When I played for the Phoenix Giants, as you just said, Ron, I'd go out and warm up at 6:30 before the game with shorts and a T-shirt on, and I'd be drenched in 20 minutes of warm-up, come back in, take a quick shower or dry off and put my uniform on. It is very humid. It is very hot. And players are – you're going to have expanded rosters, as they talk about. But it is very difficult to play in the heat. And you're talking June, July, August, and it starts getting warmer by each month. Don't you agree, Ron?
Yeah, it's very hot. You know, I managed the 2 years there at Scottsdale Stadium, the last 2 years of the Phoenix Firebirds, 96 and 97, I think it was. And, you know, the one thing I found, you know, I spent my life in the PCL, Bill, you know that. So, you know, when we were in Hawaii and other cities, when you came in to Phoenix, I had a more difficult time dealing with the heat when you came in there, you know, with Hawaii for 8 days. It was like, oh, my God, you walk into that, you know, that blasting heat and you're not used to it. But I found the second year in Phoenix that we found ways to, you know, conserve our energy. We take batting practice and we, you know, guys would go out and hit. And then they would take their ground balls and they would go in. They wouldn't stay on the field for more than 15 or 20 minutes because you're taking BP at the hottest part of the day, you know, 4:30, 5 o'clock, and that's the hottest point in Scottsdale. So I think that's something that would not be comfortable, but it's definitely doable. And this last proposal, I think what made sense to me is if the fans – are all in favor of changing the divisions, I think that's the only way you can do it. Because if you have teams in Arizona, I mean, how are you going to have our division playing against normally when not all the teams are there? You know, not all the divisions are set up in Florida or Arizona. So I think if you change the divisions, like the proposal was, I think they had us, Colorado, Arizona, the Cubs, and Oakland all in the same division, we are very close to one another. I mean, you can control a lot of the travel and a lot of the problems that you'll have come with traveling around and logistics. And if they can do the same thing in Florida, I actually think, you know, barring if the fans would like it, I don't know. That's a question to them. But that's more that sounds like it's more doable to actually have a safer, you know, healthier environment if you change the divisions around and try to do it in Florida and in Arizona and get the games on television, at least to start.
Well, what do you think about not having fans there and just the logistics of it, the trainers and the food and you'd all be living sort of together in a special hotel and all that? What do you think about all that?
Well, you know, first of all, I'd say we're very fortunate to be playing baseball for a living. And, you know, it's all relative. I mean, I don't think it's, you know, what we normally have. I mean, is it going to be as exciting as it is playing in major league stadiums and having fans? Absolutely not. But if it helps the country and it gets the games on TV and it gets business going back again in a safe environment, I think that the players, obviously, and everybody in baseball would be willing to do it. But, you know, the entertainment factor is not going to be there. It's going to be a tough, long season playing, you know, at Scottsdale Stadium and being in Arizona in that heat and the isolation. You know, there are a lot of little details to work out, but I think the biggest detail is the divisions and the travel and those things. And this latest plan I saw at least sounded a little more doable to me.
Hey, Marty, let me ask both of you guys a question. With these changes that they're trying to propose, one of the things they were talking about was having the DH literally everywhere. And these are things that they've talked about, the same thing with a computer computer umpire behind home plate. Both of you, question, do you think this would be the time to try to implement that and experiment with it?
Well, go ahead.
Well, I think it is, Bill. I think that, you know, there's been so many rule changes in baseball, and the way the game is going, you know, the changes in the game, I think if it's a half a season, this would be the time to experiment with a couple of these things, only because we're not going to be able, it doesn't look like we're going to be able to travel from city to city and have our normal divisions and have our normal, you know, season, even if it's half a season. So having said that, if it is going to be changed that much and we are going to be in Arizona, the question becomes, you know, why not if they want to try some of these things to see how they go over? Again, the big question to me is, and I'm not saying I'm in favor of, you know, getting rid of the DH because, you know, I'm a traditionalist at heart. I've been in the National League my whole life. I personally would not want to do that. But in an abbreviated season, I think, you know, all cards are on the table. But again, the big question is, how are the fans going to react to this? And are they going to enjoy this type of baseball?
Boy, I think they'll enjoy it. I really do. I think people are desperate. I mean, how many times can you watch a Seinfeld rerun, as Bill said? You know, I mean, honestly, you know, there's at some point, you know, you want to see the real thing, whatever that may be. I'm with you guys. I've said this before. This is an experimental year for me. If they want to have three balls, two strikes, seven-inning games, I don't care what they do, as long as we have something to sort of look forward to each day, which brings us back to some sort of normalcy if it's safe and healthy. One of the biggest obstacles I saw in this thing, well, is, you know, the thing that we have in this country that's so important is social distance and keeping away, wearing the mask and, you know, gloves and whatever so you don't catch it from somebody else. When the inning ends, the players are supposed to sit like 4 or 5 feet apart in the stands and not in the dugout. Well, what about the trainer and the pitching coach and all that? You know, those kinds of things. I guess if everyone is tested and they're clean, I guess you could go ahead and do that. You can bring them a little closer together.
Yeah, Marty, I agree. There's a few things in that latest proposal, not the latest one, the previous one that I didn't agree with, and that was it. I mean, sitting in the stands 6 feet apart, I just don't see the players, you know, okaying that. I mean, we want to get playing, but that's kind of over the top, the thing. Now, the big key is testing, and you just said it. If there's testing and we're more self-contained with the club and you're tested on a routine basis, I think then you can play your season without getting on airplanes and doing a lot of the other things that will happen in the travel. I think it's easier, obviously, to control that environment being in Arizona with different divisions than it is in the other scenarios. So we'll have to wait and see where we are with the testing and where the country is, and how quickly we can get back to doing these things and which way they decide to go and if we can do this or not.
Good analysis. Very good. No, good analysis, really. And I think we hit it pretty well there. Let's talk a little bit about the replays that are on KMBR today. Well, the first one, and Bill, was the playoff game, the wild card game against the Pirates. The Pirates went to try to win the division, and Garrett Cole pitched over the weekend. Liriano did, and Volquez was the one who the Giants got to see. And, of course, Bumgarner is all ready to go. And whoa, you could start off on this one, going into Pittsburgh with Bumgarner, another wild card game. Well, what did you think?
Well, you know, I'll start with saying how really, you know, their decision to pitch Garrett Cole on the last day of the season to try to win the division was a huge plus for us. I mean, when they decided to do that, because, you know, they still needed to win their game, but they needed Arizona to beat St. Louis as well to win the division. So it was a big risky move and a tough decision for Clint Hurdle and his club. And then the other thing was they chose to go with Volquez, and we had a pretty much left-handed dominant lineup, in my opinion, some of our better hitters. And they could have went with Liriano on 3 days rest in a must-win game, and they chose Volquez. And he didn't pitch poorly, so that wasn't the thing. But I believe that really helped us in this game. And, of course, we had our stud, you know, the legend of Mad Bum, you know, starts right here at that game. But I'll just end on this and let Bill go. But that was one of the best environments, you know, toughest environments, loudest crowds that I think I've been involved with the Giants. I think the next crowd closest to it was probably down in Anaheim in 2002 when they had all those clappers going on and they had that rally monkey going up on the board and the fans would just go nuts. But, you know, the Pittsburgh, all in the black, it was like going into a Raider game. You know, the black hole, the whole stadium was like that. It was an impressive atmosphere going into it.
You know, one of the things I did was I looked up Bumgarner that year, how he did, and he finished 18-10 with a 2.9. But the number that jumped out at me was his road starts. He was 11-4 with a 2.2. He really did not pitch well at home that year. And I covered that game, and I remember saying, you know, he is so comfortable pitching on the road, and I didn't think that game was going to bother him. But I was right with you, Ron. Seeing the crowd and how loud they were and the terrible towel, the gold towels were flying. The place was live and loud. And I remember a couple of the guys were saying it was even hard to even listen to anybody in the dugout. It was that hard. And Madison and Volquez just, they pitched lights out for the first three innings. And it was a Teutaw game. It was no doubt about it until that fourth inning.
Well, yeah, Bill's exactly right. And they both did pitch well. And, of course, the big blow was the grand slam. And you know, that's the way to take the crowd out of it. You know, the minute that happened, you know, the two big takeaways in that game was the grand slam changed the, you know, the atmosphere, mm-hmm. took the crowd out of the game, and Bumgarner was unbelievable. I mean, he was locating the ball. He was mixing his breaking ball. They had a pretty tough lineup. And he went through those right-handed hitters like they were nothing. And, you know, that's one of the best. He's pitched a lot of great games. But that game right there is right at the top of the list.
Amazing. And, you know, the last thing I'll say about this one, Crawford hadn't hit too many home runs going in. I think Mark K. Simon says of Sports Info Solutions told me on the phone that I think he had two homers in the last 60 games, Craw. And Craw got a slider, and he didn't miss it.
Yeah.
No, he didn't miss it. And, you know, the benefit, again, is, you know, you play over there in Pittsburgh at their new ballpark. You know, if you have a righty and a lefty, you know, on the mound, it really makes a difference because where you can hit the ball out pretty easily is in right field. You know, it's like our park. It doesn't jut out as quickly and is difficult to hit it. But right down the line in right field, it's a dangerous place to pitch as a right-handed pitcher if you have a pull lefty up there. And Crawford hit it good, and he got it up into the stands, and that changed the game. And of course, Bum did the rest.
Great game.
Yeah, I was looking at the box score here real quick. Harrison, Mercer, McCutcheon, Martin, and Marte were the first five hitters he had to face, and he silenced them. I mean, those were five really top hitters, and of course McCutcheon won the MVP the year past. So, I mean, you're talking about a dominant team in Pittsburgh, and he just shut them out. And I think you hit it right on the head when Crawford hit the home run. It took the crowd completely out. They were stunned. And, of course, the Giants side, we're jumping out of our seats because it was such a key hit and a home run by a shortstop. But just like Marty said, wasn't supposed to hit a home run at that time.
Yeah. Boy. Yeah. Great moment.
Mm. Well, it's on to Washington. And I just want to touch on the ninth inning of the Washington game. Where you guys came back and tied it up. And then, of course, Belt, we know, hits the home run to win the game later on. But, you know, in going through this 10, 12, 14, as I've said, you peel back those layers of the onion, and there are just you always came through when it had to happen. How about the ninth inning of tying that game up?
Yeah, and that was a great inning. And what's overlooked a lot in that inning, because it wasn't, you know, it wasn't the big hit, but it was Joe Panik, I believe, started that rally with a walk on a 3-2 count, where he took a pitch that a lot of people in the stadium thought was a strike, and Joe's got a tremendous eye, and he had to put up a great at bat to work a walk, and then I think Posey got the hit, and then there comes Sandoval with the double down the line, and it was bang bang at home plate. If we had replay, we may have scored two runs on that. We maybe could have played a normal game instead of two games that day. But that walk was huge, and as you said, then the guys came through. You know, Pose and Sandoval. I mean, shoot, we're down to our last four outs, and we you know, that's not the first time we did it, and we do it again in this playoff run.
You know, Ron, one of the pitchers that was an unsung hero that whole year was Jake Peavy, and he started game one. And they were talking about him starting the elimination game. And, of course, Bruce Bochy went with Bumgarner, and he started Peavy the first game. And he was dominant, and he was so good the second half of that year. Tell us a little bit about your thoughts on Jake that time.
Yeah, well, when we got Jake, you know, more than anything, you know, he had a great career. I mean, he used to throw, you know, mid-90s, and that ball would sink. But the biggest thing about Jake is he's a fierce competitor. And when he came to us in that trade, or we got him, what he brought to our club was a determination, a confidence, and a commitment to the team that you don't see from a lot of players. And he really changed, you know, some of these guys' attitude, because he was such a competitor. And you talk about Vogelsong and his game face on the day that he pitches. But Jake is loud. He's boisterous. He was a leader in that clubhouse, and he was all business. And you're right, Bill. I mean, what a great competitor. You know, not pitching with great stuff, but, you know, knowing what to do, knowing the hitters, trying to keep the ball down, get the ball on the ground, you know, without great stuff. And you have to have a lot of respect for him to reinvent himself like that. You know more about that than I do. And he used to be a hard thrower, but he brought so much to the table. And, you know, Boch had him in San Diego. And, he was the right guy to go out there and start it out for us, because he had those leadership qualities, and you knew he was going to give you everything he had.
I loved great. When you'd hear him grunting. You'd hear him grunting on some of the pitches. And that's what I love, a little bull in him, you know, when you throw a pitch and you'd hear him grunting or screaming and hollering. I mean, that's what I loved about Jake Peavy. You're absolutely right. Competitor plus.
You ever play with a guy like that, Woe? You ever play with a guy who screamed on the mound like that?
No, not too much. Not like Jake. And honestly, I wanted to say that I couldn't stand Jake Peavy when he was in San Diego. I used to get mad that he'd be out there grunting and screaming, and I thought he was a showboat. And, you know, Flan would tell me, because he had him down there, oh, he's a great guy. No, he's just doing that for himself. That's how he gets himself psyched up, and he's not trying to show anybody up. But I didn't like it. And then when he came over to come with us, I absolutely loved the guy. So, yeah.
I think I was told Nolan Ryan used to grunt too. Is that true?
At times he did. There was a lot of guys that grunted, and I tell you one, we go back to Bill Fisher, one of my Kansas City Royal pitching coach. He says the best time to grunt is when you throw a changeup. He said grunt and everybody think you're throwing 99 plus, and you throw a changeup and the hitter's going to hear you grunt and they're going to think it's a fastball. And it's true. It is true. Peavy did that a lot.
Yeah. Okay, Marty, I'll tell you, there was a lot of hitters grunting when Nolan threw too, because when they were that ball would hit them in the ribs, they had to let out a grunt there as well.
Oh boy, I love it. It's great to, you know, it's live radio. You know, we never know where we're going to go with this stuff. Hey, let's take a break. I promise, Raph, we try to take a break without going too long, so we can get some breaks in. But we'll come back. We'll talk about Ishikawa. You know, well, where he came out of nowhere. He wasn't even part of the Giants when the season started, and of course the big hit he gets, and then into Kansas City. And well, I'll tell you, this going back over these replays, it's incredible to me the way it works out. So we'll take a break. We'll be back with Bill and Woe right after this.